Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Pucks in Prague. Last chance for you to enter tomorrow at 11:59 p.m. And David Ockberg, Team Ockberg, giving you another chance to win a five-day trip for two. It's my European vacation, and you can come too. Round-trip air from Chicago, VIP ticket package. See the Blackhawks and the Flyers for the 2019-2020 season opener in the Czech Republic. And Ockberg will be in Friday to pick a winner. But you got to do it online. To enter and get the official rules, go to WGNradio.com/trip. Contest ends tomorrow at 11:59. Joining us in studio now, Scott Stantis, world-famous editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Hey, what happened to you and I? You came on this show probably 10 years ago when I was doing the afternoon show. Did you annoy me or something? How come you haven't been on since?
No, I think I annoyed you.
That's what I'm saying. Did you annoy me? Why didn't you come on having to come? You haven't been on since then.
I wore pants and everything. I mean, it was...
That's one of us. Yeah, that's one of us. I saw a story the other day, and I was thinking of you because... a major newspaper in the United States said, well, we're not going to do editorial cartoons anymore.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very bad trend in a tough time for newspapers.
Well, yeah, but it's stupid. I mean,
it is stupid.
Well, here's the stupid part. Can I just point out the stupid here? They ran a cartoon, and it was President Trump wearing a yarmulke walking Netanyahu as a dog with a collar that has the Star of David on it. Ostensibly, because that's what's on, you know, Israel's flag, right?
Right.
So the cartoon ran. People got angry. They probably should have. It was ill-advised. But here's the funny part. The guy who picked it, there are editors who do their... This is their job. They pick the cartoon.
Well, there's layers of approval for this stuff.
Let's go with layers.
Yeah.
There used to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now they make this pronouncement that they're not... They fired their cartoonist who worked in their Paris edition, and they fired the guy who does their... who cartoons in their Asian edition. Neither of these guys drew this cartoon. So
why take out everybody?
Then they make this announcement that we're not going to run editorial cartoons at all. Ever. And so none of these people drew these cartoons. And by the way, this is the punchline. The guy who picked the cartoon, the editor, still has his stinking job.
It makes no sense. Makes no sense at all. Then one person that's supposed to go, okay, well, this is probably not a great idea for us, and we're not going to do it. Then nobody gets fired.
Right. Or just don't, you know, make that kind of pronouncement.
How many times have you run into that where you've drawn something and you feel really good about it? And, you do what I do in a different way. Where there's always going to be people that go, well, why'd you have to do that? Why'd you have to say that? Why'd you have to draw that? Is this a good idea? And sometimes you have to fight for what it is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And sometimes you have to fight and say, this is, you know, this is exactly the right way to say it. Because this is wrong. Because this is, you know, I feel strongly about this. That's what's great about editorial cartoons. And what's weird is the diminishment of editorial cartoons in America, coupled with the diminishment of newspapers. But newspapers getting rid of cartoonists is crazy. In this day and age, when people read less and when images are more immediate.
Well, I've always said this. The great thing about political cartoons is they please the stupid. And they intrigue the smart because there's no reading involved. And if you're smart and intrigued by it, you read it and you see the three or four layers, speaking of layers, of the meaning of the cartoon.
Yeah. So getting rid of that, absolutely brilliant. I was looking through a thing called Press Display. I look at print editions because I ego surf every morning to see where my cartoons
are. Yeah, where am I? Who's talking about me today?
And there's a newspaper, and there are two newspapers had no art on the page because you know what? If you see a page that's just gray, you just want to read it, don't you?
Absolutely.
Am I right?
It just jumps out.
Oh, you say, oh, please. And the headline was about some radio tower they are putting up someplace in Florida.
I'm not even interested in that, and I'm still in this business. It is unfortunate, and believe it or not, and I think a lot of you do, because the smartest audience in radio is editorial cartoons and political cartoons. Are part of the key to covering those who rule us. And without the Fifth Estate, including the cartoonists, we got nothing.
I agree. Couldn't agree more.
Well, nice to see you.
Nice to be seen.
Welcome back. Don't screw this one up.
Yes, sir. I'll be polite.
So let's talk about the Hamilton exhibit. How'd you get involved in this?
They called me up. It's that simple.
You're minding your own business?
Yeah, just, you know, living life, and got a call. They said, would you like to be involved in a Hamilton project? And, of course, we were asked that. You go,
yeah.
And so we worked this out. We worked with a production company out of Washington, D.C. And I got to tell you, Steve, the funniest thing is, like, we're talking, we have these conference calls and these video chats, and they're going, yeah, you know, Lin-Manuel likes this and he likes that. I'm sitting there going, oh, yes, well, of course, that makes perfect sense. But inside of me is this five-year-old child going, squee! This is the best.
Lin-Manuel likes me.
He likes me. He really likes me. And so, I did work on the Federalist, and I love history. I'm a history wonk.
Yeah, same.
The Federalist, and having read the Federalist Papers and known about that debate, you know, everyone thinks that the Constitution was like a tablet from on high, mm-hmm. and the Founding Fathers saw it and they were glad.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not how it happened at all. They called each other's names. It was scurrilous debate.
They smelled funny.
Well, they didn't bathe and they wore wigs.
It's a bad combo. It's hot in Philly in the summertime.
But I got to draw these guys. It's a debate in the hall. It's a debate between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists are Alexander Hamilton and James Madison. And how many times in your life are you going to be able to caricature James Madison, who is 5 foot nothing and scowled a lot?
Yeah.
I mean, he was just he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
He's a mean little guy.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah.
And on the other side was Samuel Adams and Patrick Henry. So I got to caricature all these guys screaming at each other. I get to have... Samuel Adams has a quote that he talks about the Constitution as being monarchist, and you're going to sow these seeds, and like a canker worm, they will be devoured. And I'm going, oh, you got to come up with canker worm, right?
There's an analogy.
Canker worm. So I have a canker worm actually eat Patrick Henry in this thing. So, and then spit him out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Didn't like the Federalist Papers. They weren't going to digest all that well.
Well, and you know what a canker worm is? It's actually what
I don't know.
It's what they called an inchworm. See, now you know.
Oh, and knowledge is look power. At the education you're bringing.
Yeah.
How about that? All right, so when I go into the Hamilton exhibit, where will I see your stuff?
You'll see it in the hall, Federalist Hall, where they debate the Constitution. And the whole exhibition, you haven't been yet, right?
I've not, no.
It's worth going to.
I'm sure it is.
Especially if you love history. It's this totally immersive thing. You start at the beginning of Hamilton's life, and you're in St. Croix. You go through the hurricane. You immigrate to the United States. You go through all this stuff.
I mean, there's a million reasons he should have died.
Oh, yeah.
You know, way early.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Along with being a short guy.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, is there's a hall where you go to a ball. Well, that kind of rhymed.
Yeah.
And all the figures are there. Washington is there. Hamilton. And you don't realize how short Hamilton was. He's a tiny fella. And so I stood there at the exhibit during the opening, and I go, I wonder if this is the real height. And a voice from behind me said, it is. I'm like, oh, thank you. And so I went, after a few seconds, I go, how do you know that? And it turned out I was the producer of the play.
Oh,
of
okay. The exhibition. Well, so, yeah, so he's done some research.
Yeah.
And, you know, we both agreed on the fact that he was a mean little fella. He was also right about most of the things that he declared, and probably would have been a heck of a president if not for a couple of problems in his life. I'd encourage you to see the musical as well if you haven't while there's still time. But does the exhibit complement the musical, or can you see, if you haven't seen the musical, does the exhibit work?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Although, I mean, who hasn't heard the musical? I mean, it's like a...
Well, I've heard his songs, but a lot of people still
haven't
seen it.
It's in the Constitution. Yeah, you have to see Hamilton.
It should be mandatory.
Yeah, free press. Yeah. See Hamilton. Yeah.
We know Pence went.
But the Hamilton exhibit, the museum exhibit, is... it complements it. And if you're at all interested in history, or you want to get your kids interested in history, I mean, it's a great way to immerse them in that, too. I mean, the scene for the British boats filled up New York Harbor mm-hmm. with 30,000 mm-hmm. plus troops, mm-hmm. British troops. The idea that you're standing there looking at the world's greatest military force is now filling up your harbor.
Yeah.
And the holy crap moment. And they capture that in a wonderful way. And it's just room after room like that.
Well, it's part of the miracle of this country, because the fact that this country survived. You know, you talk about the first year of a restaurant being tough. The first 50 years of this country, it could have gone the wrong way a bunch of times.
And the
debate, a bunch of they came in and burned the White House down.
Well, they came back. That's some unfinished business.
Right.
You know, the Federalist debate is one where you things I didn't know. Alexander Hamilton opposed the Bill of Rights. Did you know this?
Actually, I did, yeah. Oh, yeah, but I'm a bit of a nerd like you.
Well, you're smarter than me in that sense, because I didn't know. I go, really?
Yeah.
And so you have Madison kind of tiptoeing away from that, because he knew that was a necessary a compromise they had to make. Hamilton, to his credit, his point was that we don't need it. That the Constitution as it stands gives everyone rights. As soon as you start giving people rights, you can take them away.
Here's a weird observation from that period, and I don't know if you've had it as well. If you go back and look at the Founding Fathers, most of them live a long life. Most of them live to be old men. And old men by today's standards. I mean, Jefferson, Adams both die on July 4th. I think they're both well into their 70s. 70s then was 112 now. And it's kind of amazing. And I've no, this has nothing to do with that conversation necessarily, but healthcare wasn't great. But they probably had the best doctors of the day because of who they were, right?
Not just the best doctors, but they also lived, with the exception of Adams, who is the only signer of the Declaration of Independence who did not either own or lease slaves. One guy.
I did not know that.
John Adams was it. He just on principle. So the rest of them lived lives where they didn't have to work very hard.
So they wouldn't run the risk of having a sickle cut their head off and things of that nature.
Yeah, or get scratched and get septic and
infection.
Die.
Yeah.
Have a blister or
something. Because I think the lifespan then was about 20.
You're not far off. I think it was in the 30s.
Yeah, so it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, it is.
So it's got to be a heck of an honor, isn't it?
Oh, it's a tremendous honor. Are you kidding? Seriously. I mean, this whole project, once you get, you know, they told me what it was and who was involved. And, you know, you walk in, you're given this device and you can point at different things. And it's narrated by Lin-Manuel Manuel. Sorry. And other people who were in the lead of the original cast are doing And it's just wonderful.
And we have the guy that plays Hamilton coming in tomorrow, right?
Miguel Cervantes. Yeah. Yes, he's coming in tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
So that'll be good. And we'll explain to him that he needs to see your stuff before he sees anything else.
Yeah, my wife, to her credit, we went to the exhibit, and my wife's take on it was, they need to have people sit down. They need to close the doors, and they need to watch your stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great support at home.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's Sicilian, so I'm just telling you people, stop and watch it.
Don't mess with a Sicilian.
No.
All right, I got a couple more questions for you. Hang around. If you've got something you want to ask Scott Stantis about the business that he does and how he got into it and stuff, if I don't ask it, you should. 312-981-7200. Texters, phone calls, whatever the case may be.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I was just attacked by my headphones. You ever do that thing, Carms, where you put your headphones on and they snap you in the face?
Yep.
Oh, that hurts.
I'm lucky to be alive.
It's an embarrassing moment, and you have to question your own athletic ability, Steve.
Well, I think it was on CLTV, so I hope some people caught it.
Yeah. I didn't notice.
It's like last winter when I fell on my sidewalk, and it was so slippery, I had to butt slide my way off the patch of ice to stand up. And I'm thinking, as hard as I fell, I certainly hope the neighbors saw it.
You know, I hit myself in the face once with my headphones near my eye, and I actually had a black eye for almost a week.
And how do you explain that?
It's like, what happened?
I fought off some muggers. It turns out it's your headphones. welcome back. Scott Stantis here from your Chicago Tribune, and we can follow you on social media, can't we?
You can, at Scott Stantis, at Scott Stantis on Twitter, and, Scott Stantis on Facebook, or just go to chicagotribune.com/Stantis.
Who was the first to recognize your artistic or your smartassery when it comes to talent?
My seventh grade algebra teacher was having a parent-teacher conference with my mom and said, you know, Scott's really very talented. And my mom is like, saying, well, yeah, he's okay. And now she says, no, he's very talented. He can draw. And my mom says, yes, he likes to draw. He goes, no, he did drawing in class, and he's very good. And my mom's starting to get very proud. She says, well, we think he might have a future. And that's just, no, he's very good. And she brought out the drawing I have drawn of my algebra teacher being flushed down a toilet.
So that's where she appreciated it.
She did.
Yeah,
I think she kept it. Nice. Mrs. Sumi. I remember Mrs. Sumi.
So as a natural talent, do you get formal training?
I have... I'm laughing because I talk to high schools and colleges, and the teachers always puff up and say, so tell us about your formal education. Mm-hmm. I go, well, I was kicked out of college and never really finished an art class.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But I always liked to draw. I was always a thing.
But isn't it? It's like comedy. It's like anything in life. There's two types. There's those who are gifted at it, you know, and you are. And there are those who work very hard at it. But can you learn to become a legitimate artist, or is it something within
you?
Yes,
yes. No, this drives my wife crazy, because she, and I tell people, yes, anyone can draw. Being an artist is something different. That's taking an art, a skill, a technical
skill. Well, it's
something
skill. In your soul, too.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyone can draw. Yeah, no, I know. Everyone, I know.
So there are fundamentals to it, and you can be taught it.
Yes, I believe you can.
What about graphic art taking the place of something like what you do? Because we can do almost anything on a computer now.
Well, deep fake videos. Have you seen this?
Those are unbelievable.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. And memes have kind of stepped in. Editorial cartooning is sort of like Mad Magazine in a way. I hate to admit this, but for years, Mad Magazine was, oh, my God, you can't, it's subversive. You can't read that. My goodness.
Yeah. And
now it's like the whole culture has sort of gone past Mad Magazine. It's an anachronism. And editorial cartooning with memes, kind of done the same. I mean, those serve the same purpose. Quick, fast, pithy, if they're good. you know.
That'd be a good title for a new magazine, Pithy.
Did you, that's true, Steve.
Yeah, wouldn't be bad.
Robert Crumb,
sure, love his, I loved his work when he was, before it was, you know, cool, back in the 60s and 70s, yeah. I used to sneak into the, you're supposed to be 21 or older to go into the underground comic store, but they didn't really pay much attention to that, so read his work.
Now, you have personal political beliefs. How do you keep them out of your work where you draw something that states the message you want to make, even if maybe it's counter to what you believe?
Oh, I don't. I don't draw anything I don't believe. I mean, I'm not told by the Tribune that, you know, to do.
But don't you have particular leanings one way or the other?
Absolutely. No, I'm a conservative. I worked in Republican politics, worked on Reagan campaigns in 80 and 84. And the only degree I actually possess is California Republican Campaign Management College.
Is that right?
That's true.
So, what'd you pay for that?
They paid me. It was fun. It was great.
So could you go out and run a campaign right now?
Could I? Nowadays it'd be difficult, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's certain skills of that, too, that
there's a skill
repeat.
Set. Yeah, and how you sell as point of view and how forcefully and how you get it into the people's hands. I mean,
all right, so let me shift it the other way. Are there enough cartoonists doing the other side to counterbalance what you're doing?
Good Lord. For every conservative cartoonist, there's 30 liberal cartoonists.
Okay, so we need more of you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Are there any more of you out there? Or are you the only one?
There's some good ones. There's Mike Lester, who works out in Florida. There's Steve Kelly. There's Lisa Benson. There's a handful of us. It's a small cadre. We meet in dark rooms and undisclosed locations from time to time.
Right. Secret handshakes and a knock at the door.
Yeah. Well, we usually just...
Now, I've never been more down the middle in my life. The far left and the far right are the problem. They're not the solution. And I have never hated both parties more than I have at this point for destroying the country one day at a time. But there's not a lot of me either. You know, in this business, there's either far right knuckleheads and a few far left knuckleheads.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, I'm a never Trump Republican. There's three of us left, apparently, selling your soul, apparently, is what you do now if you're a Republican.
Thank you, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. That great guy. Couldn't be prouder. You're right. It's hard. If you're, I'm looking at a time and now, okay. Old man alert, you know, stay off my lawn, stay off my lawn.
Yeah.
But back in the day when I was came up in politics, you had a Republican Party that could have a Ronald Reagan or a Barry Goldwater, but also had a Nelson Rockefeller. Democrats by turns could have a George McGovern, but it also had a George Wallace. You know, so both parties had a pretty broad tent. Now it's so narrow, and the Democrats are moving more and more to the progressive left.
It's no good. And it's no good. It doesn't help anybody. It's not, you know, Democrats running around going socialism and thinking you're going to get elected is insane. Republicans running around saying, I can't say anything bad about the guy in the White House, no matter how nuts he is insane. And I believe that you're going to have a large a portion of those 100 million who didn't vote last time come out. The question is, who are they going to vote for? Because our friend Pat Brady, I also agree with him completely, and his point is the Democrats will lose this election based on who they pick, not on whether Donald Trump is an effective candidate, if, in fact, they pick the wrong person. But right now, out of the 508 who have declared, who knows who the right person is?
You're going to watch the debates? Because that's going to be fun.
Oh, of course.
Three two-hour debates.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I want to do anything I like for three two-hour segments.
And there's no win if you're moderating a debate, because you're supposed to stay out of it, but you're supposed to ask probing questions. I don't know how those two work.
Well, and plus, how many are going to be on stage at one time? It's 11 or something like that?
Yeah, and NBC is trying to get as many moderators as possible, too. I was talking to Chuck Todd about this last week. They got 112 moderators and 58 candidates. Anyway, it's nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
And this is a good appearance, so whatever I was annoyed with last time, I'm done.
Oh, great.
We've made up.
Oh, is this a beautiful moment?
If we can
give me a hug,
hope for
fella.
America. Get off my lap. All right.